This edition of the Virginia Bioscience Podcast features Dr. Kevin McElfresh, the CEO of Casework Genetics, a Virginia company that applies DNA technology to forensic science. Casework Genetics recently signed a deal to locate its new 9,000-square-foot corporate headquarters and forensics lab in Woodbridge, Virginia. This interview was held on the 8th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks. During the interview, Dr. McElfresh describes his experiences working on the forensic team, assisting the chief medical examiner's attempts to identify thousands of victims who lost their lives at Ground Zero. The host is Mark Herzog, executive director of the Virginia Biotechnology Association. The podcast lasts for approximately 20 minutes. Kevin, today is the 8th anniversary of the attacks of 9/11, and we're sitting here at the Biotech Park in Richmond, Virginia, thinking back to that day. And in our conversations we've had together, it's clear that you had some interesting experiences in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks related to forensic analysis and DNA identification of the victims of that tragedy. Tell us about where you were that day when the attacks occurred, and what course of events took place that led you to Manhattan and dealing with the analysis of the aftermath.
Okay. Well, and perhaps one of the more interesting coincidences of my life, I was working with, at the time, the United States Army Central Identification Lab in Hawaii, where they were doing repatriation of remains from Southeast Asia and Korea, and working on identification and helping them work through some very difficult identifications. And on the 10th of September, I'd actually flown to the USASL labs in Honolulu, and I was literally just down the road from Pearl Harbor when we were attacked in New York. And I knew instantly, because of the things that I did and the fact that I knew a lot of people in the medical examiner's office in Manhattan, that I had to be involved. There was no way I wasn't going to contribute to this. If I had to leave my job and go work it by hand, I was going to do this. But my immediate worry was for my family, which was back in D.C., and then, you know, my good friends in New York at the ME's office. And by the time I could get back to D.C., several days later, we had finally gotten through to Bob Shaler in the forensic lab in Manhattan. And Bob had the clarity of thought.
But let me interrupt you there. How did you get back to the States? Because wasn't air travel shut down?
Air travel was shut down. I have some very good friends in the air business, and one of the very first planes that got back in the air out of Honolulu, I was on it.
That's amazing. So you're talking about Mr. Shaler, I guess.
Yes. Dr. Shaler, then at the time, was the head of the forensics lab in New York City. And Bob and I had worked together at a previous company in New York, developing the very first DNA tests ever done in this country. And I was, thrilled that he was safe. I knew that he traveled through Manhattan every day to get home. Then he had the clarity of thought, like I said, to realize that the amount of work that was now going to happen would literally overwhelm the ME's office and the forensic services in Manhattan. And unfortunately, crime wasn't going to stop either. And so, you know, how did he serve two masters? And he was clear that he needed to serve the criminal justice system in New York, and that he was going to need a lot of help to process samples. And he knew in the previous company that I worked in that we were very capable of processing a lot of samples with the technology that we had at that time. And so we instantly began figuring out, how we were going to get refrigerated trucks into Manhattan, because, of course, Manhattan was still closed. In fact, you know, the Ground Zero was still burning. And we knew on our end that we were going to have to develop some new technology all over again, not only develop it, but get it validated and in the lab and in use, because it was not simply going to be possible to process what were clearly going to be thousands of bones.
So this wasn't FEMA or DOD or anything like that directing this. It was sort of grassroots, the medical examiner's office in Manhattan.
That's exactly right. And it was, the beauty of it was that there were people in New York who were able to be calm in the middle of a horrible storm. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Bob Shaler gets an amazing amount of credit for having what's called grace under fire. You know, this man knew he was overwhelmed the moment those towers were hit and was able to look to people he knew and say, this is what we've got to get done. And because of the spirit that engendered, I mean, you remember when I got back into D.C., there wasn't an overpass that didn't have a flag on it. There wasn't a car that didn't have a flag on it. It was an amazing sight. And, you know, especially having just come from Pearl Harbor,
right?
You know, so I was already sort of, and am always continue to be overwhelmed when I'm at Pearl Harbor. And so then I come back here and, you know, everybody wanted to do something. But fortunately, a group of us that had some breadth of experience were there. And you know, from my perspective, counter to anything they would ever teach you in a business school class or anything, the first result of this was, how do we get this job done? I don't care how we get paid for it. You know, I don't care if we ever get paid for it. This has to be done. And
so is it all run out of the ME's office, or is there a separate group that sort of formed to do it? Or
initially, everything was run out of the ME's office. All of the hardcore work was being run through the ME's office, being coordinated by the ME's office, and other groups formed around it, all very well-meaning people, all wanting some way to help. But literally, after you reach the point where you were bringing bone fragments out, and you really have to remember that when those towers came down, they were like a giant shredder. In several instances, we had over 200 fragments for a single individual. When we began processing. And I mean fragments the size of a quarter, a half dollar, not anything really recognizable other than just charred bone. Once you had the system in place where you were getting the samples labeled and packaged out of the ME's office and into the hands of the laboratories, you have to remember there were just only so many hands that could be on it. And people and groups that formed around it wanted a way to help, so they began working on, you know, sort of the ancillary things that went around it, like quality control and how to get the data out. And, you know,
So you must have had to educate the first responders and the construction crews and everybody that was on the site, not just right away, but throughout the months and months of the major cleanup process.
Yes, and the ME's office really tackled that very well. You know, the medical examiners were there to teach all. I mean, literally, I've talked to, you know, people who were, you know, bikers who, you know, who lost a relative in one of those towers, who showed up, put on gloves, and started sifting through the debris with no background whatsoever. And to the heroic efforts of the ME's office in New York, these people were able to be trained enough to recognize charred cement from charred bone. Now, there were times we did get charred cement, but I would argue that what went to Fishkill it really got picked through very well.
And that's the depository for all the steel and fragments of non-human tissue and all that.
Right. It was an amazing effort, and it was an amazing ability of people to basically form a team and come together and just work toward a common goal without, you know, you could be anywhere in that situation, shoulder to shoulder with bikers and senators. It didn't matter.
Right.
You know, it was all about how do we account for this. And in our own lab, for example, we had put up a whole series of sheets, just taped them to the wall, that were all the names of the individuals who had been killed or lost, not only at Ground Zero, but the Pentagon and right. In Pennsylvania. And so
you must have asked for samples then, I take it, from family members who had lost relatives.
Yes. Yes, I mean, there was lots of processing. I mean, there were far many thousands of samples processed over and above just one per number of people lost. I mean, it was an amazing effort. I mean, at one point, just to give you some perspective, in a previous air crash, we had processed about 800 bone fragments over the course of a summer, and we all sort of patted ourselves on the back. That was considered to be pretty good record for amount of bone fragments processed. They're the toughest sample to process, at least among the toughest. And then by the time we finished ramping up, for quite a while, we were processing 1,000 bone fragments a week coming out of Ground Zero. And it was, you know, all you could do. A lot of people were working amazing shifts, you know, sleeping in their offices, that sort of thing. But it was all about service at that point. You know, right. You never thought about all the other issues that people think about during the regular course of their daily lives and business after you've put in a 90-hour week and you're thinking, okay, I need a break. It was, I've put in 90 hours and now I'm going to put in another 90.
Right.
It was an amazing feat.
And what are the challenges like in terms of the work you were doing? If you, I don't know if you have any statistics of all the victims and how many you're able to identify. Or
I used to have that stuff pretty clearly all in my head. It was, by and large, if I remember correctly, it was around 1,700 or more individuals who were actually identified, which is amazing. I mean, considering that those towers came down and shredded the individuals, soaked them in jet fuel, incinerated them, and then they were soaked in water.
Right.
And we were still able to get DNA out of a lot of those samples. And I think there are samples there that may yet finally give way to some newer technology and capabilities that we're developing now that I think has led me to this place in time. I think in large part the motivation to continue to develop new technology, in forensics especially, it's very easy once you have a technology validated and set and in place and accepted by the courts and you know, all of the bells and whistles around it that make it usable in the laboratory, it's very easy to just continue to ride that horse down the road. And I think it was the 9/11 attacks and things like that made it clear that the technology we had at that point was just not good enough yet.
Right.
And I see the newer technologies coming out of the human genome space that just are amazing. And I think they bear having some work put into them to develop them to see if we can't go back and do some more.
In terms of responding to disasters like that, what are the lessons learned from your perspective looking back 8 years? How would you do things differently to best prepare the United States or others for this sort of scenario?
The difficulty that you face is that, by and large, everybody knows a disaster is going to happen. But if it didn't happen this morning, then you've got a lot of other things to do, and the disaster sort of slides down the list a bit. And you have the federal government, for example, is really good at stockpiling the materiel that you need for a disaster, blankets, water. But they are in the position of only so much funding in a horrible economy. And you can't really sustain a group of people who sit around and wait for a disaster. I mean, even FEMA has a corps, but then the FEMA workers go back to their regular life until they're called again. So I think the real issue is to find a way that we can gather some expertise from people who have lived through a disaster like that and worked on one and take the best practices from that and find a way to put a core in place of people that when something bad happens, this is the number you call. And it's about finding the people like Dr. Shaler who had that grace under fire mentality. You know, there have been other situations where people didn't have that kind of backbone that allowed them to stand there and look at the storm, and things went horribly wrong. They went terribly wrong. I mean, look at Katrina. You know, that never quite worked. And yet, we knew that hurricane was coming for days. But it was a different set of people, and we don't have continuity from one thing to the next. Nobody looked at that hurricane and went, wait a minute, we learned all these lessons in 9/11. We ought to do the following five things.
Right.
And so I think if there's anything that we ought to think about, you know, of course, how do you prioritize that against, you know, healthcare reform and an economy that's terrible and your day-to-day lives? And That's a very difficult thing. I think that's actually something I think the bio community could look at, and it's going to take that kind of grassroots that we had for 9/11, where people just stepped up.
In the time we have remaining, tell us about what you're doing today and your company, Casework Genetics.
Casework Genetics is, in fact, doing exactly what I said a few moments ago, was we're taking technology from the human genome space and we're applying it to the forensic world. There are still some very difficult problems in forensics. Mixture samples, for example, samples where multiple individuals are in the same crime scene sample, blood spots, or a victim with semen stains. And we're applying this new technology, learning and defining ways to be able to parse those samples apart. They do it in the human genome space all the time. You know, they mix samples together, run multiple samples in the same chip, and then parse it all back out. And so we looked at that and decided there had to be a way to do it in forensics, and that's where we're headed.
Well, that's very exciting. So what, will we see that on CSI some night?
I don't know. I don't know. You know, it will never happen as fast as it happens on CSI. We take longer than an hour. But the fact is that I think there's some important work, and a lot of that motivation. You could not come out of 9/11 having touched all that many bone fragments as we did. Freezers full of bone fragments and not be changed by it. For those of us that dealt with it, there's a motivation still to find better ways to get done what we had to get done then. You know, and of course, how many years are we down the road now? The computers that we have, the technology that we have has all grown. We've got to find a way to better protect ourselves for when it happens again.
Dr. McElfresh, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for downloading the podcast of the Virginia Biotechnology Association. For more information, please visit us at www.vabio.org.